We'll look at the tape.
Hogan Johns.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
Part of Chicago's best Bears coverage.
I don't know.
Now, here they are.
They're day-to-day in my mind.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue.
I'm violent.
And the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
What an a-hole.
Hug it, chug it, football!
What's up? Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed your bye week. Maybe got some things done around the house on Sunday.
I did not.
Why not?
My daddy do list is still, honey do list, whatever you want to call it, is still awfully long. Did not check anything off that. So we're in the doghouse.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah. You should be for that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. This is episode 128 of the Hogan Johns podcast. We are back after a brief hiatus because there was no game on Sunday, no Bears game. But Adam Johns still did cover a game over the weekend, headed up to Green Bay to scout the Packers.
And the Lions.
That's
next,
right.
Next two opponents.
So which one's better?
Oof. Lions, barely. The Packers, I thought they were better than that. Aaron Rodgers, I know we'll get into it, but boy, did he cover up a lot of holes in that roster.
Yeah. He's the most talented quarterback in football.
Mm-hmm.
Been saying that for a long time. Long time. Doesn't have the best resume. That's Tom Brady, but most talented, Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Has been for a while. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Our producer is Joe Romano. You can follow him at Joey Joe Rowe. You'll hear him throughout the podcast. You can read us at WGNRadio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. You can find the pod on iTunes, TuneIn, at the WGN Radio app. Please download that. It's a good app for you. No voicemails this week because there was no game, but that number is 312-222-5050. Write it down. Keep it with you. The voicemail line will be back open on Sunday for Bears and Packers, and we will break this whole thing down. But let's start with the news of the week out of House Hall. And I think the kind of the biggest thing we got to watch over the next few days is the status of Danny Trevathan.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears' very talented inside linebacker who's having a great season. And I wrote this in my 10 Bears things. It's not just how good he is. It's that he also makes the other linebackers better. Like, Christian Jones is better when Danny Trevathan's in the game. So this is concerning to me because he has not practiced. The Bears have had four practices since they lost to the Saints. They had two last week before they broke for the bye week. They've had two this week so far. And Danny Trevathan has not been out there at all. We haven't even seen him in the locker room. At one point last week, he had a crutch that he was using. So,
yes, he did.
So it's a calf strain, another soft tissue injury. Put it right there on that long list that just keeps growing and growing and growing. Strain, according to John Fox. So my question is, how bad is that calf tear?
Well, obviously significant if he needs a crutch to walk around Alice Hall. But he's using a crutch to get through the locker room in front of all of us. So very disconcerting. Now, he did finish the game. That was a couple weeks ago. Things have gotten worse. Tightened up on him. Whatever. Does not look good. Can he play? Of course. This guy did not play a single snap in the preseason and still started week one against the Falcons. So obviously the Bears are comfortable inserting him in the lineup regardless. He knows the defense. I'm not really concerned about his loss, though. You know why? Because Aaron Rodgers is out. And two, the guys that have come in at inside linebacker have done better than fine. Christian Jones, he's not giving up that starting spot. Nick Kukowski can come in, fill a role. He's got upside, we all know. Bears view him as a starter. John Timu, he's healthy again. He can be a serviceable backup. I get that the Bears' defense is better with Danny Trevathan, but at the same time, I feel confident in their depth.
The one thing I would say, though, is they got by just fine in that Vikings game when Danny Trevathan was suspended. But late in that game, when John Timu got hurt, there was kind of a trickle-down effect. Christian Jones had to take over the headset and relay the defensive signals. And the defense kind of, there were some struggles.
Well, Kukowski was out of that game as well. So at least you have Timu. You have Kukowski. There is some depth. I get that Jonathan Anderson's your bottom of the totem pole linebacker, and he did not get the job done in that long touchdown run the Vikings had, but the numbers are there, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, they have depth at the position. There's no question. I think it's a big loss if you don't have them. Maybe this is a good week to not have them because the Packers certainly are having their plenty of offensive issues. And I should say, we're going to bring in Mike Heller from the Big Ten 70 in Madison. He does Afternoon Drive. Show gets syndicated across the state of Wisconsin. You might have also heard him fill in for Dan Patrick from time to time because he's a fill-in for the Dan Patrick Show. But he knows the Packers inside out. You've heard him on this podcast before and some of my other radio shows. So we'll bring him in a little bit to help preview the Packers and this mess that they have right now with Aaron Rodgers being out. For right now, we'll stay on the Bears. And other than Danny Trevathan on the defensive side, interesting comments yesterday, I thought, from Mitch Trubisky and Dow Loggins. They're at least talking like they want to open up the offense a little bit this week.
I'm pretty anxious and excited about this week. I kind of feel like it's a new season in a way. I feel very confident and I'm very excited to really just start to open things up.
I'm sure he wants to open things up. I'm sure Dow Loggins wants to open things up, too.
You know, we probably need to do a better job in pass protection and separating versus man coverage to help him out a little bit.
But will John Fox let them open it up?
I think people have completely underestimated the impact of not having Mitch Trubisky compete for that job and not having him take a first-team snap for 4 weeks before giving him that starting job.
In hindsight, do you think that was a mistake?
Probably, but you can't operate in hindsight right now. We can. They can't. So those first 4 weeks or his first four starting experiences against some pretty good defenses on the road in some pretty tough places in Baltimore and New Orleans, you have to take all that context into consideration of why they ran the ball so damn much.
Yeah. And also the game situations, the way they played out.
Yes.
That's my concern in this game is, and we'll get into it more when we talk about the Packers, but like their offense is a mess. It would not surprise me if the Bears have an early 7-10-0 lead.
Right.
So does that mean that John Fox goes back to, all right, shut it down?
No, because you still become predictable. They have to become more balanced. They have to. They can't.
And part of the reason why they have to is they gotta help Trubisky get better here.
Right. And you can't leave them in vulnerable positions where it's 3rd and 9, and the defensive ends can literally gear up and come attack him. You got to have some balance. You got to pass him first down every now and then. You got to use those bunch formations more and more and more since they seemingly worked the last time we saw the Bears offense. And I think the competition level is going to allow them to be more balanced later this year. It starts with the Packers. The Lions aren't anything to write home about. You got the Browns, the 49ers. These aren't the defenses that Trubisky saw in his first four starts.
And also, the Bears personnel could look a little different in this game. Dontrell Inman will make his first start for the Bears, assuming he's not limited or anything with the offense. I mean, they've been raving about his intelligence.
You know, even if it is, they're already limited anyway.
Yeah,
with Trey McBride and Tanner Gentry. You know, like, whatever, they're already limited because they got rookies and inexperienced playing galore across the board.
Yeah. And then Marcus Wheaton could return as soon as Sunday from this groin strain. That being said, can we put things in perspective here a little bit? Because, I mean, the Dontrell Inman's getting talked up at Howell's Hall like he's Calvin Johnson. All right. And the return of Marcus Wheaton is great. The guy has one catch this year.
Yeah.
He's played in three games.
All right, let me ask you this.
And let me go back to another. Do you know how many catches he has since 2015?
Well, he missed like a whole year last year.
Yeah, he has 5 catches.
Okay.
He played in 3 games last year. He caught the ball 4 times. You know, and even in his 2 good years, he had 44 catches in 2015 and 53 in 2014. That's not even as much as Dontrell Inman had last year.
Yeah, well, that's a complimentary piece. All right, let me ask you this. Dontrell Inman and Marcus Wheaton or Trey McBride and Tanner Gentry? Who are you taking?
I mean, I think Inman and Wheaton, but I don't know.
What does experience tell you?
Dontrelle Inman had, experience tells me.
Matters, yeah.
Yeah. But do you know who has more catches this year? Dontrelle Inman or Trey McBride?
Trey McBride
has more catches. Yeah.
Trey McBride's fine.
So here's my question. After catching 56 balls last year for the Chargers, why was he barely part of their plans this year?
It's a good question.
Like
I thought the same. Like that's why I tried to throw, you know, a wet blanket on his acquisition, because you know everybody's excited about a guy they traded for, but this is a guy who was inactive for the Chargers.
And I know he had a hamstring injury in there, but it seemed like that last game he was inactive, it wasn't because of the hamstring. He wasn't on the injury report that week.
So his best year ever still did not prevent the Chargers from going out and drafting Mike Williams in the first round. Seventh overall, something like that.
Yeah.
So,
but that I can understand.
Yeah.
That's a great talent.
A little BPA situation.
But, you would think that's like, a compliment to, you would think actually adding Mike Williams would help Dontrelle Inman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Williams had his own issues early in the year with the back, but he only played four games. He only caught the ball twice this year.
Yep.
So, and that's with Phillip Rivers. I don't know. I'm just not convinced that Marcus Wheaton and Dontrelle Inman.
So you're sticking with Gentry and McBride.
No, I'm not. I think you have to change that.
Yeah.
Or although McBride did have a decent game against the Saints, maybe he can build on that.
And they like I guess Gentry what I'm saying blocking is, situations. I get it.
I'm not sure all of a sudden this offense becomes completely different in the second half of the season.
No, and you are missing Zach Miller now.
Which was your best receiving weapon.
Yes. I think it could become different because I think, well, I don't generally believe that Mitch Trubisky is going to be the boat raiser that John Fox thinks he's going to be. He's not going to raise all boats.
He's not going to raise all boats?
No. Yes, but I think there's a certain degree that he can make these guys better the more comfortable that he feels and the more he's allowed to throw and find a rhythm and stuff like that. I do think there's another level to him that will help the outside guys. I don't know what that level will be as a rookie. I'm trying to keep things in perspective, but I do think his development will help make plays or help his receivers make plays.
So let's talk about the Packers a little bit. You were at Lambeau Field on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn?
That the Packers may stink. No, I don't want to come away overly as harsh on them because I feel like the Aaron Rodgers loss has completely drained this team. You know, I mean, Martellus Bennett, by all accounts, probably quit on them, and now he's cut for failure to disclose certain things about his injury situation, you know?
I think it's pretty obvious Aaron Rodgers' injury had something to do with this.
Yes. So what struck me is walking through that locker room after the game and just how I wrote about it. It was very Bears-like to me. Defiant, searching for answers. Some of the quotes they were using sounded like the quotes from the Trestman era. From last season when they went 3-13. You know, we got the right guys in this locker room. We just got to find ways to win. Stuff like that. They got problems. Serious problems. Aaron Rodgers covered up a lot of them because he's just that good. Like you said, most talented quarterback in the league. And now all of their problems there are for, they're open for scrutiny now.
Going back to that week four game at Lambeau, you may remember I picked the Bears to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
I did so thinking that there's absolutely no way that Mike Glennon was going to get out of that game. But he did. They stuck with him. I still maintain that had they made a change when it was 14-0 in that weather delay, I don't know if the Bears would have won, but I think it would have been a much different outcome. It turned out to be a blowout in the Packers' favor because of the four turnovers. But that prediction had everything to do with, yes, I thought that they might bail on Glennon. I was wrong. But also the problems on that Packers team. It was all Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
I mean, and remember,
a little help from Mike Glennon.
But you go, well, I'm just saying, but you give Aaron Rodgers all those short, you give Brett Hundley all those short fields, and the Bears probably lose that game.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that's obviously the key this week. Trubisky can't be turning the ball over like crazy, but that's the one thing he hasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's throwing a couple of interceptions here and there.
And those are going to happen.
Two-minute situations.
He's a rookie, yeah.
But he has not been turning the ball over like Glennon. So, I mean, I just go back to this offense for the Packers, and it's amazing how much Rodgers was lifting it up. But it's also, when you have a guy that's that good, there's no possible way to really replace him.
No, there's no
like no matter who you are.
No.
Matt Flynn did an okay job that the last time Rodgers missed significant time, right? But this is a different situation, and this is a different Packers team. They have not been drafting as well in recent years as they had been under Ted Thompson.
Oh, I heard all about that on the radio.
Yeah.
Caught a lot of post-game radio from that Packers game, and then again in the morning. It was the same things, caller after caller after caller. And this is great for perspective because we hear the complaints down here in Chicago and stuff like that from fans. And I know it's important not to overreact to them, but to hear them calling and calling for Ted Thompson's head, for Dom Capers' head, for Mike McCarthy's head, it was fascinating. It was fascinating. Now, I've heard complaints from Packers fans before, but the incessantness and the same mindset from all of them. It's pretty interesting.
And this might surprise you, but this actually wasn't all that different a year ago. When we went up to Green Bay in week 7 last year, I remember doing, I went on Mike Heller, our next guest. I was on his show before that game. And he was asking me from my outsider's perspective because at that point, the Packers were kind of showing signs of struggling. They would go on to beat the Bears that day, but they ended up losing 4 in a row after that. People forget how big of a mess it kind of was before Aaron Rodgers flipped the switch and they won out and made it all the way to the NFC Championship game last year. But I remember Mike Heller asked me what I thought about, you know, should they move on from Mike McCarthy? Should they fire Ted Thompson or whatever? And my answer was, be careful what you wish for.
Yep.
Because this seems very similar to me, like the Lovie Smith, the end of Lovie Smith's time, where you got a guy who's been there for a long time, had some success, even more success because these guys won a Super Bowl, okay? And was it Joel Quenneville? Someone said that like you can't be at a place for more than 10 years.
I think he's talked to that ilk before.
Is it Judge? Or maybe that's Theo Epstein. I don't know. Someone here in Chicago.
Like coaches have their lifespans in places, and usually the max for it is it's 10 years.
Yeah.
Usually. And you get exceptions like the Bill Cowher. Hasn't Mike Tomlin been? Is he approaching 10 years? Jim Harbaugh or John Harbaugh with the Ravens? You have some of those coaches across the league. But yes, eventually, era's coaching staffs run their course.
Now, I'm not saying that long term, that might not be the right move for the Packers, but I think if you, and we'll talk to Mike about this, but you make a huge, enormous organizational change here, I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And we certainly saw that with the Bears. You know, they had a 10-6 team that they thought, all right, you know, you get an offensive-minded head coach that can come in here and help Jay Cutler, it's only going to go up. Well, it didn't. It went the opposite way, and it was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Now, partly that's because they hired the wrong GM, but you know, you can't just switching head coaches or GMs doesn't fix anything immediately. So it's an interesting situation in Green Bay, and it's certainly interesting that we're entering a Bears-Packer game where the Bears are expected to win.
Yes.
Easily.
For the first time in, almost 10 years, 2008, right?
That's the first time they've been favored.
Yes.
I mean, I would argue that you went into the NFC Championship game saying the Bears should win, even though they weren't favored. You went into Week 17 in 2013 saying the Bears should win this game, even though they weren't favored. But there's a difference between saying, all right, maybe this is an equally matched game that the Bears should win, as opposed to, really, you look at the matchups and it would be unacceptable to lose the game.
Yes.
That's kind of what they have this week.
Mm-hmm. There's a different type of pressure now on the Bears, one would say. John Fox is using the P word, is a popular word. Playoffs, Packers, pressure. The expectations are different. I wrote about it today or yesterday. 5-5 is very realistic for this team. You got the Packers. And you got the Lions at home, two very beatable teams. Then you go to Philly, one of the best teams in the NFC.
Well, I mean, really, if you're a good team, you should beat your divisional opponents at home.
Yes. Yes.
So
and let's not forget they lost to the Vikings, but Trubisky had a chance to do something in the final minutes where that could have been a win. First start.
Yep. They were in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point it's pretty clear the Vikings are the best team in the division. But I don't know. As I keep looking at this Packers team and what's happened in the last month, it is crazy how different this team is just because of one player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at the Pro Football Reference page of them. Remember Ray Rhodes, Packers coach?
Oh, yeah.
1 year and out.
Mm-hmm.
So they've shown to make abrupt changes when they think things aren't going right.
When was that, though?
That was in 1999. They went 8-8 in his first year, which first-year coach, pretty acceptable, right? But he replaced Mike Holmgren. Then he brought in Mike Sherman. And you got Mike McCarthy, you know?
Yeah. All right, let's bring in Mike Heller. You can follow him on Twitter, at Heller Sports. You can hear him on the Big 10 70 in Madison, the Big 920 in Milwaukee. You've probably also seen him filling in for Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen from time to time. Mike, interesting times in Green Bay, it seems like, with those Packers.
Yeah, if we didn't have enough to talk about with the futility of losing three straight, not having an offense, not having a defense to force the Lions to punt a single time on Monday, then you get the Martellus Bennett story, which pretty much came out of nowhere yesterday, and there's really no resolution to it today. I think that at the end of the day, what this story looks like is a player that got fired for quitting. And we'll just see how it plays out. You guys have history with Martellus Bennett in Chicago, and so do they in Dallas and New England. But he was unproductive mostly, and now he is not on the roster. It appears that initially he was quitting, and then because they couldn't diagnose a specific injury, so then the Packers fired him with cause. And if you want to read between the lines here, it looks like they fired him for quitting.
Mike, obviously, I don't think we were surprised by this in Chicago. Maybe it happened faster than we thought, but we know Martellus Bennett has a history of running things afoul in locker rooms. I'm just curious, what's the reaction from the players? Earlier in the year, everybody seemed to be really into this guy, all his goofiness. There was a clip I saw today of him wearing the piece of cheese on his head, the cheese head. Thing. So what's the reaction like in the locker room when this big money free agent, a tight end they brought in who won the Super Bowl last year with the Patriots, just gets up and leaves the team?
I think that the reaction is similar to what you would expect from fans. I think the fans loved Martellus Bennett when he arrived on the scene. He's certainly a different cat. And I think the players like that about him too, that he was lighthearted. He was funny. He was glib. Aaron Rodgers liked him because he's very smart, and Rodgers really appreciates that. Aaron talked about him glowingly throughout. But then you have to produce. You know, great personalities are great usually because they're good at what they do, and then we enjoy their personality. And Martellus Bennett didn't produce. He dropped 11% of the balls that were thrown to him. He only caught balls for 230-plus yards in the seven games he played. Did not find the end zone, was a critical miss for Green Bay as far as providing talent to the team. So I think he grew out of favor in the locker room when there was a lack of production that went along with his big personality. And usually those things don't work. If you produce, personalities are great. If you don't produce and you have a big personality, that usually rubs people the wrong way, not just in the fan base, but in the locker room, and I think that was the case here.
Yeah, and I talked to Marty over the summer at one point, and he was really excited about going to Green Bay and being closer to home because he still lives in the northern suburbs here in Chicago. But really, I think he wanted to play with Aaron Rodgers more than anything. And so I have a feeling that Aaron Rodgers' injury had a lot to do with this. And that really, it's amazing, Mike, as we look at this matchup this week against the Bears, how much this has changed since the end of September, week 4, And I came on your show the day after that game, and the Bears were the one with the enormous quarterback issues and whether or not they were moving on to Mitch Trubisky because Mike Glennon was awful at Lambeau. And I believe the term you've used for Aaron Rodgers on your radio show a lot is the golden parachute. And certainly I think we've learned in the last couple weeks since he's been hurt that it's a completely different Packers team without it.
Yeah, I don't know that there's another team in the league that relies more heavily on a single player than Green Bay does. You know, you would say that they do in New England with Brady, but we've seen how Bill Belichick just adjusted when he was out, you know, and I think that's the storyline in Green Bay. I know that, you know, the fans are horribly disappointed in how the Packers have played in the two games since Rodgers was out. Now, it goes out in the first quarter at Minnesota, so I think you kind of throw the rest of that game away, putting Hundley in there with no reps and no preparation and a game plan not at all suited to what he does and can't do at the quarterback position. But then you had a week to get ready for New Orleans, and that didn't look good at all. He threw for 87 yards. And then you had 15 days to get ready for Detroit, a defense that had struggled, and you couldn't find anything. You had an opening drive that resulted in a missed field goal, and after that you did next to nothing on offense the rest of the night. I don't know what the answer is. You know, the Packers lost Rodgers in a game against Chicago in 2013, and I believe they won two games of the seven that he was out. And those were won by Matt Flynn, who they picked up off the trash heap midway through that process. So far, Hundley hasn't shown anything, and to be fair, I don't know that the scheme has played to his strengths, and if there are enough strengths there to play to.
I'm curious then, do you think they'll run the ball more, like with him specifically, more designated runs for the quarterback, because we know the athleticism. He can move. The arm strength is still there, but obviously he can't run the same offense as Aaron Rodgers. I'm wondering if Mike McCarthy goes back to the UCLA tape and implements some run calls for him.
Well, you know, they had 15 days to get ready for Detroit on Monday night. They ran a read option on the first series, of which ran for 9 yards. I think the fear is that Joe Callahan, who you guys have never heard of, Joe Callahan is the next quarterback up. And I think they're afraid to run much read option with Hundley for fear that that they simply have no answer after him. So, I don't know. Shoot, I mean, I thought that they would utilize the tight end position more. There were three tight end catches on Monday night. I thought they would run the ball more. Aaron Jones had 5 carries, and they didn't run the ball really at all in the second half. I thought they would utilize that read option, even if you hand it off. They only ran it once. He kept it for 9 yards. They didn't run it again. I thought that they would do something where Davante Adams, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb were more involved. Only in the first series did they do that. So there are a ton of question marks. And I think it's the first time in 9 years against the Bears that the Bears are favored. And it's not just that they're favored. They're favored, and the number keeps going up. It's almost a touchdown now.
Yeah, it's weird. We're struggling to even, like, is this possible? Because we're looking at the matchups, too, and it's like, yeah, the Bears really should win this game. I don't know, easily is the right word, but comfortably, it seems like, if you just look at the matchups. But I want to ask you this, Mike, because I'm never surprised by fans overreacting and getting, you know, upset and calling for people to be fired. That's how sports works, especially these days. But, you know, I think from the outsider's perspective, from us here in Chicago, I still think Mike McCarthy's a good coach. I look at Aaron Rodgers went down. I mean, what do you expect? There's a huge drop off. Of course, he's not going to look like he's that great of a coach anymore because he's lost his. It's like that in any sport when you lose a player that good. But the Ted Thompson thing also interests me because, you know, I don't know that the drafting's been as good as it used to be. So I'm just, can you kind of give us what is a maybe more realistic, measured analysis of the status of Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy right now as they're obviously going through some trying times?
Yeah, the interesting thing here is both contracts are in a state of limbo at some level. And, you know, Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy in that regard. I think the biggest call, honestly, Adam, in Green Bay and in Wisconsin, where the Packers are concerned, has been for that of Dom Capers, who that defensive coordinator for Green Bay that's been there essentially the entire tenure of Mike McCarthy, just really hasn't been good enough in the grand scheme of things. On Monday night, it was the first time since Thanksgiving Day in 1971 at Tiger Stadium that the Lions didn't punt in a game. That's the first time since 1971. And that has been something I've debated back and forth about the Packers' inability to play defense. Is it Don Capers and the scheme and the old, aging defensive coordinator, or is it the groceries that have been purchased for him by Ted Thompson? I think Thompson has been a really good drafter and developer of finding guys on the offensive side of the football that have turned into really good players. Jordy Nelson wasn't a highly thought-of guy out of college. Devontae Adams the same. James Jones a generation ago, or a decade ago. Greg Jennings, they all fall into that category. He drafted those guys, those offensive linemen. Sitton, Lang, Bakhtiari, Bulaga. Those are all his guys, and they're all middle rounders. He's done a very good job on offense. You can name one star player he's drafted on defense, and that's Clay Matthews. He's now 32 and no longer dynamic. So I think it's a combination of Thompson and Capers. And when it comes back to McCarthy, I think it's an issue of he's been too loyal to Don Capers. And McCarthy and other people say he's ridden the coattails of Aaron Rodgers. But McCarthy turned Favre, who was aging and not good, he turned him back into a good quarterback that was a great quarterback when he finished, and he developed Aaron Rodgers. I think McCarthy's a great coach. I think he gets a lot of criticism based on what Thompson has and hasn't done and what his defensive coordinator hasn't done.
Mike, we talk a lot about injuries here in Chicago because it seems like every week somebody's getting hurt. This week it's Danny Trevathan with a serious calf strain where he needs a crutch to get around Halas Hall. But the Packers, again, Aaron Rodgers stands out, but the offensive line's been in flux. Brian Bulaga, a local Chicago suburban kid, I mean, he's out with a torn ACL. Morgan Burnett's been ruled out with a groin. How has the Packers, just in general, other than Rodgers, handled the attrition of things? Was it just Rodgers covering everything up? I mean, how would you explain their injury situation?
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? Because, you know, there's some national people this week, Dan Levitard, Colin Cowherd, talking about Aaron Rodgers. Why does he want to stay in Green Bay? If you were Aaron Rodgers, wouldn't you want to opt out and leave? First, he can't do that. His contract runs through 2019. Second, none of those guys were saying that when Green Bay was 4-1 in the, you know, going into the game at Minnesota that Rodgers got hurting. The Packers were 4-1 and were quite obviously the choice in the NFC to maybe make the most significant run at being in Super Bowl 52. It just changes when Rodgers went out. So I don't know that you know that they've handled that injury situation very well. And overall, through five games, that team was as banged up as any team in the NFL. You know, they didn't have their two safeties playing. They didn't have anybody on the offensive line. Bakhtiari was out. Bulaga was out. Their starting left guard was out. They were playing with guys that were on the practice squad the week before or, you know, working in construction the week before on the offensive line. That team was banged up and still 4-1. Now, you know, obviously they have the most significant injury that they can have, and that's to Aaron Rodgers, and they have to find a way. And the schedule is actually gettable, and I don't mean to minimize Chicago, but Green Bay gets the game in Chicago, then a home game at Baltimore. They go to Pittsburgh, but then they get Tampa and Cleveland. So there is still an opportunity for the 4-4 Green Bay Packers to right the ship. Shoot, last year they were 4-6.
Mm-hmm.
The Packers were 4-6 a year ago when Rodgers said they could run the table, and then they did. So the biggest missing piece there is that Rodgers is, you know, walking around without the ability to raise his right arm.
Yeah, which is a pretty big deal. But
Mike, I don't really important caveat.
Yeah, you kind of need that. You kind of need that arm. And man, when he's up for that next contract, I think he's got every argument in the world to get every dollar he possibly can. Hey, I don't know if you do predictions, Mike, but how are you looking at this game on Sunday?
Yeah, I you know, here's the thing, right? I mean, you guys watch the Bears very closely, as I watch the Packers very closely. I would say that the first team to 17 points wins, and if somebody gets over 20, you may just mail it in. The Packers don't play good defense, so I simply think that the Bears are going to win the game. And when you think that in today's NFL, then I should probably switch and pick the Packers. Because you just can't figure anything out. Everything falls in the Bears' direction. So I'm gonna be on that side of the equation, and I'll say the Bears win 17-16. But, you know, I don't know that there's a call on this game. I don't know if the Packers can score 17 points.
I think that's the big question in this game, too, that we're about to get to. Mike, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. And putting up with our technical difficulties, too.
Oh, yeah. Happy to do it. We'll have you return the favor soon.
All right, sounds good. All right, that's Mike Heller.
Thanks, Mike.
Who you can hear across the state of Wisconsin on afternoon drives. You can hear him on the Big 1070 in Madison, the Big 920 in Milwaukee, and he has filled in for Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen as well in the past, and will continue to do so. He does a great job. So I think he kind of touched on kind of exactly what I was going to get to as we start to break this thing down. But first, our favorite segment. What does the fox say?
You know, I think at some point, you know, I can't tell you exactly the hour of that, but I know it's soon. What the fox say?
We should call this What Doesn't the Fox Say?
Was that in reference to Zach Miller's release from the hospital?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why they're being so weird about Zach Miller, but I don't know.
Well, Zach's been very open on his social media lately too, so it's just Fox being Fox.
I mean, maybe they didn't want Mike McCarthy to know when Zach Miller was getting out of the hospital. Strategic advantage.
Strategery.
You got to worry about every little thing that the opponent might get on you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It could be I'm leaning towards the Bears in this game because Zach Miller got out of the hospital at 3 o'clock on Monday instead of 5.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal.
I actually don't know when he got out of the hospital. I just know at some point Monday.
I'm very happy that he's home with his family. He's got a long, 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 arduous recovery ahead of him. But it seems very positive right now because we know it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, exactly. And he's been very uplifting, very active on social media the last couple of days.
Yes.
And it was cool. I was in Nebraska on Saturday. Zach Miller's from Nebraska. Played
Nebraska, that's where, Omaha?
That's where he went to college.
Yes.
I believe he actually started at Nebraska, though. And then ended up playing at Nebraska Omaha, though, where he was an option quarterback.
Yes.
But he also went to high school in Nebraska, and he's a big Cornhuskers fan. And according to Larry Mayer, his mom works at Nebraska. So there's our Larry Mayer reference for
Larry Mayer, fun fact.
But in the middle of that game, so Northwestern, that's why I was there. Northwestern was playing Nebraska on Saturday in Lincoln. And in the middle of the game, they gave Zach a shout out on the video board.
No kidding.
Yeah. They showed a couple highlights and said, hey, please keep Zach in your thoughts as he's
Nebraska native Zach Miller.
Yeah, because he's still recovering in a hospital in New Orleans. So I just thought that was really
cool,
really cool moment. And so, yeah, we're continuing to think about Zach and hoping he gets better because it's going to be a long road ahead. But it's great to see how positive he is about all this. And we're certainly not surprised because that's kind of what he's all about. As we look at this game, and we'll kind of quickly get through this, our prediction portion of this, but Mike Heller kind of asked my big question for me here as we get to our big questions for this game. Can the Packers score? You know, the one constant for the Bears this season has been their defense.
Yes.
And it's been partially why I have pretty consistently pick the Bears to cover the spread. Even though they've been underdogs in every game this season until this week, they've been at least 7-point underdogs in 5 of their 8 games. But their defense has been so good that other than the 2 games where Mike Glennon turned the ball over 100 times, they've been in these games.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you flip the script where they're actually the favorite, where they actually have the better quarterback, and where the other team's the one where you're wondering if they can score at all already, regardless of who they're playing. But now they're playing the Bears' defense. Seriously, can the Packers even get in the end zone this week?
I kind of my prediction. I'll get into that later. I feel them producing a lot of field goals, maybe three or four.
Four field goals.
It's not going to be a perfect game for
you,
the Bears.
You better start Mason Crosby in your fantasy league, folks.
Yeah. Pick him up. As I watched that game in Lambeau, he looked, Brett Hundley looked lost, overwhelmed. And I don't think that's going to change. I know they want to throw out that first game he had against the Vikings, but that was the last time he was on the road. He was at home against the Saints. He was at home against the Lions. I know Soldier Field isn't exactly Seattle, New Orleans, or even Baltimore, but it's still the road against the rival. I think that matters. He could be overwhelmed from the get-go, and the Bears may not even be on the field yet.
So along those lines,
bold predictions.
I think Leonard Floyd has two sacks in this game.
Oh, go up. Come on.
Up?
Up.
Do you know how rare it is to have more than two?
Yeah, but we're being bold.
No.
We're
being bold. Two is bold.
No.
In the NFL, are you kidding me?
Come on. Yeah, come on. Go up.
I'm not going up. He's not having three sacks in the game. That's ridiculous.
Come on.
Nope.
Be bold.
No. Two. Two sacks is bold. I went bold with Akeem Hicks having three in New Orleans. It's just not realistic.
But that was against Drew Brees.
It's just not realistic.
I think
the Bears might have like five as a team, but you can't expect Leonard to have. I think two for one player.
Who's going to be the right tackle with Bulaga?
It's Justin McCray.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me Leonard Floyd. Three sacks. Anyway, my bold prediction, Mitch Trubisky, two touchdown passes.
Okay, he has two so far this season.
Yes.
So I guess that would qualify as bold.
Yes.
That means the Bears are getting in the end zone twice.
Duh.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, Mike said first team to 17 wins.
Okay, which was still
great. Well, you're going to get two touchdowns. Okay, well, yes. Along those lines.
Predictions.
What you got?
I have the Bears winning 17-6.
17-6.
If Danny Trevathan plays.
Okay.
17-10 if he doesn't.
Danny Trevathan makes that much of a difference? I guess he does.
I think he makes a difference between a field goal and a touchdown on one drive. Yes, I do.
Okay.
That's where I'm going with that.
I like...
Either way, they cover. I have the Bears covering the 5.5.
Okay.
Which is in six in some places.
I feel like... I don't know how much the offense is going to completely produce. I feel like the defense can deliver them a couple short fields. I feel like they're going to create a couple turnovers.
More takeaways?
Yes. So I'm going to go 20. God, I don't think they're really going to kick four field goals. Let's say 20-13.
You came in here saying this was going to be a close game. Now you have the Bears covering.
Yeah. I feel like Brett Hundley is going to throw the ball away.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a strip sack coming from someone.
Do you think there's anyone that picks the Packers in this game?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that, let's bring in Joe.
What up? What's up?
Negative Joe.
Yo, that's me.
What do you got? Brett Hundley's breakout game here?
No way, man. No way. Yeah, I had him. I thought he was going to be good the last two games. I mean, we picked him against, who was it, the Saints and against the Lions. And that guy just hasn't shown anything. I mean, he looks, like you said, lost. How can a guy who's been in the organization for that long still have no idea how to run the offense? And I agree with everything you guys are saying about Aaron Rodgers. He's the best quarterback in the league, but you don't even have anything close to a safety net. I'm taking the Bears, but I do have the Packers to cover. I will go 14-10 Bears.
Did we all take the Packers against the Lions?
I do not have my paperwork in front of me, but I believe that was the case. Oh, wait. No, last week? No, you guys both took the Lions last week.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
I didn't really have much faith in...
I mean, Brett Hundley could be better. I bet you... I get what Mike is saying about not wanting to go to Joe Callahan and getting Brett Hundley hurt, but you got to win some ball games.
I just... I go back to the Bears' defense. Like, there's no sign that the Bears' defense is going to drop off here.
No. I'm going to argue. In a column in Chicago Sun-Times, you can see tomorrow.
Okay.
That they can actually be better.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Better. The Bears defense.
It helps when you start playing lesser competition.
You got games against the Browns and the 49ers coming up.
Yes. You just survived the first half onslaught of nothing but great quarterbacks. This helps.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for Mike Heller for joining us. I always like getting his perspective when it's a Bears-Packers week. And very confident with the Bears, seems like, across the board. We'll move on to our other games across the NFL, some interesting ones, and we'll start in Washington, where the Minnesota Vikings visit this week and are a one-point road favorite. This is a noon game Sunday on Fox against the Bears game. But Minnesota playing good football right now. So is Washington, though. Big win last week.
Over Seattle, yeah.
Over Seattle, which I think surprised some folks. And yet they're the one-point home underdog.
Don't you just feel like at some point the Case Keenum run's going to hit like some significant bumps in the road, huh?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater...
Oh, come on. He hasn't played in what? A year and a half?
I understand, but he's a full participant in practice. What's the plan there?
It's a good question. Case Keenum has not been bad. I feel like he will be bad at some point.
He's been impressive. He has held his own this season. And I think
more than his own.
That's why
he's the reason the Vikings beat the Bears a couple weeks ago.
He's the reason why they beat.
Think
yeah,
about it.
Yeah,
they
that's
were
right.
They destroying made it, Sam Bradford.
Yeah, no, that was the difference of the game. There's no question.
Case Keenum. Give me the Redskins. I feel like eventually things are going to run its course with Case Keenum, and the attrition is going to catch up to the Minnesota Vikings.
But is Teddy Bridgewater playing this week?
He shouldn't. Why would you play him?
Well, wait, he's got to play at some point. If he's healthy, he's healthy.
But Case, I get why. I don't know. I feel like Case Keenum has been more than serviceable. You need him to really screw up. They should have not have started Sam Bradford against the Bears.
All right. Well, in a game that's kind of unpredictable because of this reality, I am going to take the Vikings because Case Keenum has been playing okay.
And their defense is good.
And their defense is good, so I'll take the Vikings. Joe?
I agree. I think I'll take consistency over inconsistency. I think the Vikings have played well pretty much all season long. I love their defense. I called Harrison Smith the best defensive back in the league recently, and I think he's proven that. He's a guy that can get from sideline to sideline, will come up and hit you. And offensively, you know, they'll do enough to beat Washington by more than one at Washington.
All right, moving on.
What was, you know, kind of unusual about Brian was he kind of played like a monster man in New Mexico.
The Detroit Lions host the Cleveland Browns in a game I'm fortunate to say I won't see any.
Well, who started for the Browns? Is it Kaiser?
Doesn't matter.
Tim Couch?
I don't even care.
Johnny Manziel.
You know, what? I'm done keeping track. I don't care.
LeBron James.
LeBron. Yeah, LeBron. Wow, the Browns are a mess. This line
did AJ McCarron, this, no.
Sorry, sabotaged. This line came down a little bit. It was 12.5 yesterday. Now it's 11.5. Lions favored at home.
All that Motown money, huh?
Yeah.
Moving the line.
This is a noon game Sunday on CBS.
I don't even think the Lions are that good. They're so erratic, inconsistent. Look at the way they've lost. I don't know. They weren't even that good against the Packers. But it's the Browns.
Yeah.
Give me the Lions.
I'm going against the Browns every week. Until
AJ McCarron's on the
Yeah,
team.
Till the end of time. So, yeah, give me the Lions. Joe?
If not here, when? The Browns, I don't think they win the game, but I think the Lions, you know, maybe are riding a little too high after a Monday night win in Lambeau without Rodgers, and they have a tough time covering an 11.5, 12.5, doesn't matter, point spread. I think they win the game, but not as comfortably as the experts say.
You know, I'm not an offensive coordinator, I'm not a defensive coordinator, I'm not a special teams coordinator, but I coordinate all three.
So the New Orleans Saints, after beating the Bears, who'd they play last week again?
Tampa.
They beat
Tampa.
Tampa.
And Tampa.
Wow,
Tampa's a mess.
Yeah. So they go back on the road after a couple home games, and they go to Buffalo. The Bills are a 3-point underdog at home. Boy, the Bills screwed me last week. Locked them up in my pick'em league on Thursday night against the Jets. 3-point favorites at home.
Mm-hmm.
Felt good about it. Or maybe that game was in New York. I don't remember. Yeah, it was in New York. And I guess Buffalo is in New York. I meant New York City.
You are correct.
Well, technically New Jersey. So I'm just all wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that's really
you might fill this pick, everybody.
That's not my fault that you know they play in New Jersey and they're the New York Jets. But the Bills kind of got exposed. I thought, you know, who are the Bills? It's kind of hard to figure that out. And the Saints are playing so well right now that. You know, you kind of worry about going in a cold weather situation in Buffalo, but I don't know. I don't know how logically you can go against the Saints here with the way they're playing. So I'm going to go with New Orleans.
Well, it's the way the Saints are winning. They're winning through their running backs now. Screen passes. A consistent effort to run the ball with Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, who's a very good running back, by the way. I think he's a future star. Give me the Saints. I know it's 3 points on the road. They're giving them away, and Drew Brees outside is not the same as Drew Brees in his dome, but I like the way their offense is operating with their running backs.
Yeah, they're a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team, the Bills. I think on the road they're totally different than what they do up in Buffalo, but, man, the Saints, I'm really impressed with their defense, and I'm not sure that Tyrod Taylor has enough to keep up with the Saints' newfound offense, and I will take the Saints in this game as well.
Yeah, I think well done. It'd be well said.
That's right. The Cowboys head to Atlanta, and this is an interesting game. Falcons are 3-point favorite at home, which basically means it's an even game.
Yes.
Do you know how many games the Falcons have won in their last five?
One game.
1-4.
Yes.
The Cowboys are on a 3-game winning streak.
And they got Zeke Elliott, right? I don't know what state they went to get the appeal, but he's in the game.
I don't know. It's Thursday as we record this. The game's Sunday, which means he will be suspended 7 more times between now and Sunday and unsuspended. So... But what I do know is, in the end, every single week, he ends up playing.
Yes.
So
yes.
I'm going to assume he's going to play. I don't know what's going on with the Falcons. They're clearly going through the Super Bowl hangover situation.
They missed them some Kyle Shanahan.
This is all of a sudden a road. You know, you're going from playing Kansas City at home. But that was an impressive win over the Chiefs last week for the Cowboys. They're kind of hitting their stride. I think I got to be done doubting Dak Prescott at this point. So I'm not going to do that this week. I will take the Cowboys.
I agree. And I'm going to lock it up.
Ooh.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Yeah, great game to lock up. I think the Cowboys win this one going away. I don't think it's... I can't believe it. Atlanta's even favored.
Double lock?
I'm waiting for one. I got a different one.
Ooh, he's got one. He's got one playing. All right.
In my experience, is sugar goes a lot further than vinegar.
I forgot about that one.
I don't know, like...
You could use vinegar for so many things, though, John.
Yeah, and technically...
It's like a cleaning thing.
Technically, I'm supposed to use this one for this game.
This is Jay Cutler.
What's up, Jay?
Hey, Jay.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, what's going on? The Dolphins, 9-point underdogs here as they go to Carolina. It's been a tough go for the Dolphins lately, although Jay played really well last week.
Really well.
In the loss to the Raiders at home. But the Panthers have kind of found their stride here, and all of a sudden, the Bears have two really good wins on their schedule. You look at they beat the Steelers, they beat the Panthers. They beat the Panthers 17-3.
Yeah, their throttling of Cam Newton is looking very impressive.
Isn't it? 9 points is a lot of points, though, in the NFL.
Have they been, other than the Ravens 40-0 trouncing, that was that in London? I think it was in London.
Yeah.
Have the Dolphins been blown out at all? They're not a very good team, but I feel like they're not a very bad team either.
Well, no, that game against Baltimore wasn't Baltimore. You're thinking of the Saints game that lost 20-0 in London earlier this season.
Okay.
I don't know.
But that was Matt Moore against in Baltimore.
Yeah. So Jay's playing in this one. I don't know. I hate that I feel like I keep picking the Dolphins, but 9 points is a lot.
Yes.
That's just too much for me to take here. I think the Panthers win the game and win it somewhat comfortably. You know, not like they have to come from behind or anything, but 9 points is too much for me here. So I'm going to take the Dolphins.
I agree with you. Going Dolphins, but I do think the Panthers will win.
Yeah, make it three. Cam's upset about Kelvin Benjamin getting traded. I don't think that offense, even with Benjamin, was all that good. They can't cover 9 points, especially not against our guy Jay. Come on now.
Although, you know, logic would tell you Jay won't come back and have the same game he had last week.
Yeah.
Right?
I was going to say primetime, but then I remembered last week was in primetime, too. Primetime Jay wasn't always best Jay.
Yeah, so this is another opportunity to watch Jay Cutler. All right, let's move on to our college picks. Some fun games this week. 7 games between ranked opponents. All right, we'll start in the Big Ten. There's a couple good Big Ten games this week. You got Michigan State heading to Ohio State. But we're going to start with number 20, Iowa. And these, by the way, these rankings from this point on are the college football playoff rankings now that they're out. Number 20, Iowa at number 8, Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a 12-point favorite in this game.
All right, where's your fun fact? You've been teasing this game.
There's a reason why we're picking this game. I'm going to let you go first, though, with your analysis.
With my prediction?
You know what? No, I'll go.
Okay,
I'll go. I'll give you what I got here. All right. I saw Iowa a couple weeks ago in Evanston. It's a decent team.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they have struggles running the football, and Wisconsin has a good defense, so you certainly give a check mark there. Nate Stanley, though, is their quarterback. Stanley is a true sophomore who's taken over for C.J. Beathard this season and is playing pretty good. I believe his touchdown to interception ratio is 22-4.
You are correct.
Okay. Nate Stanley's from Wisconsin.
I'm looking at his profile. From Menominee?
Menominee. He wanted to go to Wisconsin. Garrity Anderson, who had the worst tenure of a coach who really didn't lose that much, if that makes sense. People don't realize how close Wisconsin's football program was from going straight downhill. The timing of him leaving and Paul Chris coming in could not have been more perfect because he was destroying the strength program. He was trying to recruit quarterbacks that did not fit there. He wanted to run a spread offense at Wisconsin. The linemen were getting worse. He didn't want Nate Stanley because he wanted a dual option quarterback at the University of Wisconsin, which is obviously dumb.
Okay.
So he leaves. Paul Chris comes in. Tries to get Nate Stanley to switch from Iowa to Wisconsin. But at that point, and to Nate's credit, he stuck to his commitment. I like that.
Okay.
But so a little bit of a revenge factor here as he comes back to Camp Randall, the school he probably wanted to go to growing up. And I believe there's a story this week I read in Wisconsin State Journal that like his high school coach at Menominee is like, yeah, I'm still rooting for Wisconsin, but... You know, obviously, I want my old quarterback to do well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an interesting angle to this game that I like. Also, Wisconsin's offense, not that great. I know they've put up a lot of points at times, but and they have a great
still run the ball well.
They have a great running back in Jonathan Taylor, who's in the Heisman conversation,
freshman,
and should be true freshman. But Alex Hornibrook. Iowa has the better quarterback in this game. I don't think there's going to be a lot of points scored in this game. Iowa's defense is good. So when I think of a matchup...
So is Wisconsin.
When I think of a matchup like that, and one team's supposed to win by 12 on the spread, I can't do it. I'm taking Iowa.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Wow.
And...
You locked them up?
I'm locking up Iowa, and... I am picking the Hawkeyes to win this game outright.
Does this, like, hurt your feelings?
Not really. It's just me analyzing the game.
Is this, like, an anti-jinx situation? Like, are you trying to,
it out there? Joe.
Do the reverse jinx?
We're onto something here.
No, it's a matchup thing.
He likes the revenge factor.
No, I'm not going to spend the whole podcast breaking down Wisconsin, but there was a cornerback on Wisconsin named Nick Nelson who got torched last week. By Indiana. If I'm Nate Stanley, I'm picking on him the whole game. This is going to be close, low-scoring affair, I think. I think it's just a weird game. This is the toughest game Wisconsin's had this season.
You didn't even mention the type of game Iowa's coming off of.
I know. Well, they're well,
they beat the crap out of Ohio State, who I called the best team in the nation not too long ago.
Yeah. Well, that was dumb.
Wait, what happened?
I thought Ohio State was the best in the nation. Apparently, Iowa had different plans.
No, I think Joe just wanted you to repeat the fact that Ohio State got blown out.
Their butts beaten in.
So, look, that could go two ways. Either Iowa's hitting their stride and is going to come into camp Randall confident in his health, playing their best football season, or that was kind of a fluke last week because Ohio State was awful. Their defense was awful. And there's going to be a little bit of a letdown.
And JT Barrett had 4 interceptions.
I don't know. But I got a weird feeling about this game. I got Iowa winning outright.
I like Iowa covering. Like you said, they have the better quarterback. And they're. I just have faith in Wisconsin at home with their defense.
Yeah.
Strong running game.
Clearly, this isn't Kinnick Stadium. I think there's bound to be a drop-off from... I mean, have they even scored 55 points in 2 weeks? Like, that was just that was not Iowa last week. That game didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That being said, you know, and I've said this about Wisconsin the past couple of times that we've picked them, I just don't see them beating anybody by 12 points. You know, like it'll happen against a bad team, but Iowa deserves to be in the top 25. I don't see Wisconsin winning by 12. So Iowa covers, but Wisconsin wins.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on. By the way, that's a 2:30 game Saturday on ABC. The 2:30 game Saturday on CBS going up against Iowa, Wisconsin is number 1 Georgia at number 10 Auburn. There's a lot of games we can pick here this week because it's a great college football slate as much as I've been complaining about it this season. But Auburn is a 2.5-point underdog at home. Maybe a little bit closer than you would have thought here because Georgia's been playing so... They've been blowing everybody out,
yep.
It seems like. This is only 2.5 points here. I'm going to take the Bulldogs, but I think that this is a close game. I think it could really go either way. I'm going to go with the team that's been consistent all season long until they prove me wrong. And maybe perhaps you could say that's the approach I should have taken with Wisconsin, but I don't know. Georgia's on a different level to me, and I am going to stick with the Bulldogs here.
I think they have every right. People got upset when Alabama was bumped out of the number one spot for I get when these rankings come out, people have their arguments, but I think Georgia deserves it. I really do. And you just mentioned tight games and all that. Here's Georgia's past 5 games. None of these have been tight. 24-10, 42-7. 53-28, 45-14, and 41-0.
Mm-hmm.
Just not close. Give me Georgia.
Auburn's got a home field. They've got the better quarterback. They're getting points. All of it seems to be going in that direction. Man, this is really a prove-it game for Georgia, and I'm just not sure that they have it. I don't trust their quarterback on the road, even though he beat Notre Dame. I think the... Auburn home field is a little bit different than Notre Dame. We'll see what happens, but man, I'm really on the fence with this one. I'll just take Auburn. I don't know.
It's a tough game to pick. I think it's going to be a great SEC football game. All right, let's get to the big one at night.
Hey, what we call Mitch? Pretty boy what?
Pretty boy assassin.
That's his new nickname. That's what we call him, you know.
All right, number 3 Notre Dame. Having a great season.
Yes.
Other than that loss to Georgia, which was a close game at home. Heads to undefeated number 7 Miami. First of all, I love that the U's back. Like, mm-hmm. I just think college football is better when you got... And this is the old Catholics versus convicts rivalry.
Argument. Yeah,
there's a good story in The Athletic today that actually shows that, like, these days, they're pretty much the same school.
Yeah.
Like, Miami's really high in the graduation rates, too. Notre Dame's number 1.
Well, that was a different era of college football and different stereotypes in people's minds.
Mark Richt is a great coach. This was a great hire for Miami. I said it at the time. It was a good fit. Sometimes that just happens, and it's good to see Miami back. This is a huge game they have at home. They are 3-point underdogs, though, at home to Notre Dame. And I think this is the 7 o'clock game on ABC, I believe. I wrote it down wrong. But Jared Payton's going. And according to him, everybody's going. This place is going to be incredible.
Rocking
in Miami, which will be a cool scene to see. As I believe is also the location where Notre Dame got trounced by Alabama in the national championship game in 2012. What do you think?
I really like Notre Dame in big games. I was not a believer in them. I still have my doubts about them because I don't particularly think their quarterback's anything special. Wimbush, whatever his name is. But they've beaten ranked opponents handedly. Now, albeit those have been at home.
Mm-hmm.
NC State 35-14. USC, another rivalry game for them, 49-14 at home. On the road to Miami. I mean, this is their season. This is both of their seasons. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I trust Notre Dame, but I don't trust Notre Dame, if that makes sense to you, because of their quarterback.
Look, Miami took care of business last week against Virginia Tech, which at that point was their toughest game. They took care of business earlier in the season at Florida State, which I know Florida State's having a tough year, and they lost their quarterback and everything, but that's still a rivalry game, and it's still a game they took care of on the road. I think that each week, this Hurricanes team is getting better under a coach that is, you know, is still installing a new program. And mm-hmm. they're probably a year ahead here. And Notre Dame probably has a more talented team across the board. But I go back to my rule of you don't doubt a team at home in their biggest home game of the year, in a place that's going to be rocking. The fact that they're getting points here, I'm going to take the Hurricanes, especially with the 3 points, but I actually think they went outright, too. I think they beat the Irish.
You think so? I'm going to take the Irish just because underestimating them, I think it's foolish. Again, it goes to me trusting them, not trusting them. I mean, they average over 320 yards rushing a game. That's great for the road to protect the quarterback, who actually is part of that rushing.
Miami's defense is good, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But give me the Irish. Give me the Irish. I think they continue their path to the college playoff.
Maybe I'm just underrating the ACC as a whole, but I am not impressed with Miami's schedule here and how they've gotten to an undefeated season. I agree that's going to be a tough place to play. Everybody's going to be going crazy under the lights, but I just think Notre Dame is flat out a better team. And Johnsy, you might not be impressed with Wimbush, but I think he starts to get on that Heisman train after this one, and Notre Dame wins. Lock it up.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up.
No, you lock it up.
You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
All right. Last thing about college football this weekend. I think it's going to be nuts. I think that this is going to... Every year there's that one weekend where you... And maybe some people thought last weekend was this weekend with the way that Ohio State lost and Penn State lost. But I think this week is going to be even crazier. Let me give you... We're not going to pick these games, but I just, for my own feelings, a couple other upset alert games. Oklahoma State, after losing to Oklahoma in their big rivalry game that usually gets played at the end of the year, they're not used to having to go on the road to Iowa State the following week. Like, who cares about Iowa State now after you play Oklahoma?
Weren't you just talking them up big time last couple
I'm
weeks
going,
ago?
I'm taking you inside the mindset of these Oklahoma State players.
Okay.
Right? I care about Iowa State. They're playing well. They did lose to West Virginia last week, though. But watch out. Iowa State could upset Oklahoma State this week. And then let me give you the big one. If Wisconsin-Iowa wasn't already one of them. Watch out, Alabama.
Oh.
Watch out, Alabama. On the road
Explain.
Against a good Mississippi State team. Okay. I don't know. I'm not saying Alabama's going to lose, but I'm putting them on full upset alert. I think this is a closer game than people think. Mississippi State's a 14-point home underdog. Now, when they've had their two toughest games this year against Georgia and Auburn, they got blown out in both games. So that's a fair point to bring up. But I will also counter and say that those were on the road. And this is a different situation. When they got LSU at home in week three, they beat LSU 37-7. I know LSU is not Alabama.
No.
Those two teams played each other last week. We saw that. But this is a good Mississippi State team, an underrated Mississippi State team. Alabama's had these games before. They've had these games before. They've lost a couple to Ole Miss in the past.
That was loaded Ole Miss teams, though.
Yeah, they were better. But this, I'm telling you, this Mississippi State team's not bad. And they're going to be highly motivated because you add this win to their resume, and all of a sudden, they're right in the middle of the college football playoff conversation, too. So watch out. That's all I'm saying.
I'm really glad we didn't have to pick that Michigan State-Ohio State game. Just because, yeah. I mean, I would never want to face Urban Meyer coming off a loss. And
I lost that bad,
too. Yeah, especially that bad. And D'Antonio as a 16-point dog, whew, he's going to get those boys going.
Yeah, I think he loves that. And Michigan State doesn't lose big. I don't think I think every single game they've played this year in the Big Ten has been one score. So if I had to pick that game, I would pick Michigan State. Not to win, but to cover. So
you just picked them. You picked them.
Yeah. There. You can add it to my record. I'm feeling good this week.
Bio-week did you say?
Although the S&P Plus, which is a high analytical mathematical thing that predicts the games, does have Wisconsin covering that 12 points against Iowa. So that didn't make me feel good when I saw that.
You literally have a bunch of Wisconsin stuff decorating your office here.
Well, yeah.
You're going to regret it, even though I picked Iowa to cover too.
The S&P Plus also has Purdue beating Northwestern outright, which is bizarre. All right, enough college football. Hope you enjoy the Bears game Sunday. Let's get out of here. Bears-Packers, where the Bears are actually favored comfortably. A growing spread. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Our producer is Joe Romano. You can follow him at Joey Joe Rowe. The website, WGNradio.com/Bears. You can read Johnsy at ChicagoSunTimes.com. And we're on iTunes. We're on the TuneIn app. We're on the WGN Radio app. We're pretty much everywhere where you can listen to podcasts. Please rate and review the podcast. We appreciate you doing that and spreading the word. The voicemail line, it's open this week. 312-222-5050. Bears Packers will take your voicemails and share them with you on next week's episode. Any final thoughts?
The Bears are going to win. The Bears are going to beat the Packers. Wow.
Sexy.
John Fox agrees. All right. Enjoy the game Sunday. We will talk to you after the game with our post-game episode. And, hey, maybe we'll talk about an easy win over the Packers. Seems hard to believe, though. Something weird's going to happen.
It's the Bears.
All right. Talk to you Sunday.
Hey, Lovey, how you doing?
Hey, Lovey. Hey, Lovey. Hey, Lovey. Hey, Lovey.
How's everybody doing?